I'm Gab, he's Jules, the weather in London. Who cares, because we're in Doha. And guess what, Jules? We've had our first semi-final set.
Yeah.
We have Argentina.
Yeah.
And we have Croatia.
Oh, I see what you
Honestly,
did.
Honestly, incredible night, all the way to penalties. You want drama? This is drama.
Incredible. What a World Cup this is proving to be, because I don't think many expected the game against Croatia. I mean, you could have thought that Croatia would make it difficult for Brazil, which they did. But once Neymar scored that goal in added time, in extra time, sorry, you thought, okay, this is it now. They're going to go and win this. And instead, Croatia came back. And then when it's penalties, you can't bet against the Croatians on penalties.
No, yeah, 4 for 4.
Exactly. That's what they do.
We're going to get into that game in a more granular way, of course. I was there. And then later on, we're going to be talking about, obviously, Holland and Argentina. Also, that's a bit of a dramatic ending as well, you might say.
Incredible.
As well, looking ahead, England and France, Portugal and Morocco. So much to get into. But let's start with Brazil and Croatia, because, you know, this is the game where I was struck by Zlatko Dalic ahead of time, the Croatian manager, coming out and saying very clearly, he's like, well, I'm not saying it's 50-50, but Brazil, we're not rank outsiders. Because you know what? Brazil has never played against a possession team
exactly
like our team in this World Cup. They've never faced a midfield like ours. And he said, we have the best midfield in the tournament. You may agree or disagree yeah that the trio of Luka Modric, Mateo Kovacic, and the Braz is the best. And he went out there with a game plan. The game plan was obvious. And you could see it in the first half, which I think ended up with Croatia with 52% possession. Their idea was, we control the ball. We slow the game down exactly to have it at our pace. And you, Brazil, run around and get the ball off us.
And that's exactly what they did. And you're right. And that was the perfect game plan, because the one thing that those Brazilians hates is running after the ball, having to chase the ball all the time. And you make an effort and you run on the right and then you run on the left, because Brozovic, Modric and Kovacic move the ball so well. When you've got two good fullbacks as well in Sosa and Juranovic, they come, they play higher up, they help you in the build-up, so you go wide and then the ball's still coming back. And
two centre-backs who can pass as well.
Yeah, true. And of course, Brazil still had enough of the ball to impact the game. It was not all for Croatia. But this tires you as well.
It did. I think it very obviously tired them out. And what I found interesting is, now, look, let's be clear, right? Brazil, before Brazil fans jump on us, and they still had chances.
Yeah, in the second half.
But mostly in the second half. In the first half, and, you know, we talk about managers reacting, and you know my supreme love for Chichi. I think he's one of the best. I think he's going to go down as one of the true Brazil greats. But this game is on him.
Completely.
This game on him and the players. But, you know, the players, sometimes they let you down. And we can talk about the mistakes he made later, and I think he made mistakes later.
Yeah.
But in that game, seeing poor Casemiro on his own, running around like a maniac, Lucas Paqueta, him in the packet, up against those three guys, plus Mario Pasalic, who would drop off as another sort of midfielder impersonating a winger, you just didn't see enough of the ball. And if you don't see the ball, then Vinicius and Rafinha and Richarlison, those guys aren't going to score if they don't have the ball.
Yeah, and I can't believe he didn't change something early. I have to say, I was very surprised by how passive he was on the touchline. I'm not even saying make a change after half an hour, but maybe just tweak something in his own team to have a better impact. And I think because also of the Alexandre was not fit enough to start, so you had Danilo who's trying to come inside as a left back, an inverted left back, which didn't work. You had Eder Militao, so they didn't even help you when you had the ball.
Yeah.
So overall, it just fell so perfectly into Croatia's hand. And yet, when Neymar scored, what is a wonderful goal, I think, because he's so sharp. The 2-1-2s are great.
Before we get to the goal, because you always, and I'm taking a page from your book, you always talk about the importance of substitutions to change games, right? So he did two things in his substitutions, which to me are just very weird. One is, you only have three substitution slots in a game. He brought on three players. You know, he took off Richarlison for Pedro, and then at different times he took on Anthony. Vinicius and Rafinha for Anthony and Rodrigo. And we can debate those.
Yeah.
But he did them all at different times, like 10 minutes apart. And so as a result, he had no slots left. Going into extra time, he only had one slot left, which I think is also, that's got to be a mistake.
And who did he choose?
And for those substitutions. Well, this is the thing. He chose three guys who did the same thing as the people who were there before. It's like your plan B is stick to plan A, but just with different people.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry. And I also have to say something else here. Antony and Rodrigo, in my mind, are not as good as Vinicius and Rafinha.
Definitely.
Plain and simple. Pedro, you can argue, probably not as good as Richarlison, but he gives you something different. He's got the size or whatever. But you didn't change anything.
No, I meant
you had the same problem.
You're right, and I meant more about who he picked in extra time to come on for that extra set, because I think this is a game where Fabinho should have, once you open the scoring, Fabinho should have been there.
And you Fabinho, close, Bruno Guimarães, Fred,
and you close
any one
the
of those guys.
And you close the game. But where I agree is, like, Vinicius is one of your X factors, okay? Maybe he was not having a good game. I give him that, no problem. But why are you taking him off so early? Why? When you know that on 5 seconds he can do something crazy and then you score.
More so than Antony.
More so
because
than Antony.
Honestly,
more
like,
so than
other
Rodrigo.
Than like getting the ball and stopping and looking at the guy and then doing a little shimmy and then passing it back sideways.
Exactly.
This was not the game for him.
No, and that Vinicius substitution, I don't understand it. I don't get it.
I have to say, Neymar, and we'll get to his goal because you love the techers.
Yeah.
Neymar, to that point, I thought had done very, very little.
Yeah, I thought Brozovic kept him really quiet. Yeah. No man marking him, but always in his area.
He had the mug. He had the nutmeg on the bras. But let's not forget, the bras has to deal with Neymar, and he's the guy who's got to touch the ball more than anybody and keep that midfield ticking over, right?
Yeah.
Together with Modric. So, but then that goal. The way he takes off vertically, the way they slice, the 1-2, him, bam, him to Rodrigo. Rodrigo gives it back, and then all of a sudden, little Shimini gives it back to Lucas Paqueta, and then it comes back, and then he rounds Livakovic. I mean, that's the kind of goal we're going to talk about forever.
Yeah.
If Brazil win the game.
Yeah, of course, and how sharp he looked, especially on the second 1-2, to get into the box, to go around Livakovic and score. And I thought, at times, it felt too easy for Croatia to defend because everything was coming in front of Lovren and Gvardiol. It was always there. They were always in front of them. They're a really good partnership. The youth and experiences. Gvardiol is an incredible defender, and he's going to be an incredible defender. Yeah. But it was too easy. However, if you tested them a little bit more, instead of keeping going wide, which was clearly not working when you did it, maybe they should have tried a bit more of what Neymar was trying. And if you lose the ball there, it's not so hard. You can use your counter press. You can maybe get it back. But I think they should have tested them a little bit more by going straight at them. Literally
straight at them. And raise the tempo. Make it uncomfortable for them. You've got players who can play. You've got a team of ballers.
Yeah.
And you know what? This would have been all the more important because if you think about it, Croatia played 120 minutes plus penalties. Brazil basically played 45 minutes against Korea, and that was it.
Exactly.
And then 3 minutes ago, this is the Italian in me, I'm sorry. You cannot concede a goal
impossible.
On the counter tap in extra time.
Impossible.
It's just not possible.
Impossible. This is unacceptable.
You can give up a penalty in extra time. You can. The other team can shoot from all the way out, and your goalkeeper makes a mistake. All that can happen.
Yeah.
With 3 minutes to go, 1-0 up, you cannot concede a goal. And you know what? If you go back and you watch this again, it is 3-on-3. How is it possible? It's 3-on-3 also because somebody stops running. How is that possible?
They commit so many players going forward.
What, to score a second goal?
Exactly.
What is it? The away goals rule. What is
it? Are you kidding me here? Why are you doing that? Are you all not experienced enough to say, like, let's see this game out? No problem. Let's hoof the ball into Saudi Arabia. I mean, whatever you want to do, but don't commit so many players going forward and left your defense exposed like that. And you know what? You say this on Chichi. This one for me, he should have been screaming at them before that even. I'm like, no risk. Don't take any risk. Don't even try to get into their box. Just keep the ball now for the next 3 minutes.
Earlier in the game, you can think about adding a second. But at this stage, I actually genuinely think
see
at that stage.
Out.
So he started with Kramaric up front. Then he brought on Bruno Petkovic. And Petkovic is the prototypical, he's Mr. Bump. He's a big lump of a striker.
Exactly.
Apart from an insane Tekkers moment, which I don't know where he borrowed it from.
Me neither.
Channeling his inner Buffal, perfect. Other than that, most of the time, the ball just came near him and just bounced off him. He's like one of those like reverse magnets, right?
Yeah.
So they see him breaking. They see Orsic breaking. They're probably thinking, who is this? Who's this dude down the wing? And nobody tracked back to help. And then the ball comes in the box, and he swings a big left foot. Might have taken a deflection as well. Allison is beaten. You cannot concede like that.
Impossible. This is so bad.
And then it goes to penalty kicks. And I'm telling you, in that stadium, you felt the momentum had shifted.
You knew, didn't you?
You felt, you know, Croatia are like, oh, wow, yeah, I relish these penalty kicks. You know.
You could tell. Livakovic. On TV, you could tell already. So I can just imagine for you in the stands what it must have been like.
Dominik Livakovic, the Iceman, right? In between the sticks. He looks like he's like Mr. Cool. And the sequence begins, and you can tell Croatia, there's a reason they're 4-for-4. The big talking point, when Marquinhos goes up to take the penalty, which he missed, and, you know, I'm a huge Marquinhos fan. Yeah. Again, I don't think he took the penalty badly. It just hit the post and didn't go in, right? No, he had Livakovic going the wrong way.
Yeah.
But I'll never forget this scene, and I wrote about it in my piece, is he goes up, and as he's walking up, he kisses the ball, and then the camera pans over to Neymar. You know, everybody's got their arms around him. Neymar is on his knees, and it looks like he's convulsing. And I'm imagining...
He's praying, isn't he?
Maybe he's praying in his own way. I don't know. But in Neymar's mind, either Marquinhos misses, and we're out of the World Cup, or Marquinhos scores... And then I have to go up and take the fifth penalty.
Yeah.
With all the pressure of my history, all the pressure, you know, 200 million Brazilian hearts beating as one. That is a lot to take on.
And that might not have been enough anyway because Rodrigo had already missed.
Yeah.
And why is Rodrigo starting the penalty shootout for Brazil? Can you explain? Can someone here explain to me how a 21 years or 22 year old who is one of your subs? He's a sub for a reason, because he's clearly not ready for that stage just yet. How you can put that pressure on him to go against a team and a goalkeeper that, who just won a penalty shootout, like literally 4 days before, who are very good at it, and we all know the stats and everything. Why is Rodrigo? Why
You're
is
talking
Neymar
about the order.
Yeah, why is not Neymar going first? Why
I did
not
think
someone
about
more
that.
Experienced going first? Like Messi went first for Argentina. Van Dijk went first for Holland. It doesn't mean you're going to score, but at least it's those guys who go first.
So... Chichi was asked about that after the game, and he came out and he said, well, you want your fifth penalty taker. The fifth penalty has the most pressure on it, so you want your fifth penalty taker to be your best penalty taker. It's like, yeah, but you got to get to it, right?
Exactly.
We saw it a few years ago with Portugal. Was it at the Euros in 20 whatever, when, you know, Cristiano was number five and he never got to it.
It's happened many, many times.
It is a weird one. And in that situation, again, yeah, you could have had Neymar go first, or, you know, trying to think in terms of who else was on the pitch? Maybe not the best penalty takers.
No, but Casemiro, for example, took one.
You had Casemiro. You had you had Thiago Silva, who's not a great penalty taker, I think.
No, that's for sure.
Alisson's probably pretty good, but it would have been a better option. Alexandro's not a bad penalty taker.
No. I don't know. I thought he felt, and looking at him, again, he was only on television, and you can't always base everything on body language, but it looked like Rodrigo could feel that pressure of, as you said, the whole Brazilian people all around the world on his shoulders.
We got to give a lot of love to Croatia. We've given them a lot of love. We will give them love again when we do our next show, looking ahead, of course, to the semifinal. But nothing's going to take this away. Two consecutive semifinals for a country the size of Croatia. I mean, that's next level stuff.
Yeah, and I was at the Belgium game in the group stage where they could have been knocked out if Romelu Lukaku scores one of his chances. And this is what football, is so magical in a way, is that they came that close of being knocked out. And they were still up somehow. No one really gave them a chance. Against Japan, it was a 50-50, but they could have lost that game too. They go into this game, no one gives them a chance at all. It's all about Brazil. It's all about Neymar. It's all about this, apart from Zlatko Dalic and that team and their staff and their own people. And yet, they produce something like this. To come back into the game with 3 minutes to go in extra time after having played 120 minutes 4 days before is incredible. And then the penalties is their game anyway.
It's special. It's so fantastic to see Modric. I thought the Braz against Japan was probably their best player.
Yeah.
But here, apart from Livakovic, here, of course, it was all about Luka Modric.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Gab. Just go to Indeed.com/Gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/Gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, enough Brazil and Croatia. How about some quick hits instead?
Yeah, let's go, Jules, Gab.
You want epic? This was
epic.
The only reason we're not doing this first is, I'm sorry, Dutchies, but Brazil getting knocked out is a bigger deal than you guys getting knocked out. But, man, this was something. Argentina, 2-0 up. Holland, 2-0. Incredible late goals to make it 2-2. Argentina with chances to win and put it away in extra time. And then it goes to penalty kicks.
Yeah, and then you feel the tension in that stadium, at the Lusail Stadium. 88,000 fans. Of those 88, you must have had easily 50,000 or maybe even 55,000 of Argentines. Right? They were everywhere. And they were singing and they were chanting for the first 75 minutes. And it was 2-0 up and Messi was being the goat. The assist on the first goal from Messi, this reverse no-look pass, it's just pure art. And then suddenly it changes. One cross, one header by Weghorst. And then suddenly you see they're shaking. But they're still chanting, but they're shaking. And then the second goal right at the end. An amazing set-piece combination where you expect the ball on literally on the edge of the box to go over the wall. And instead, they place it under. And Weghorst touches the ball, turns, scores. It's 2-2. And you're thinking, what is going on? This is football.
There might have been a deflection in there,
too. Yeah, as well. It was just crazy. I mean, and then the roller coaster of emotion from Argentina fans was incredible. Now they were not singing. It was the little pocket of Dutch fans, like 1,000 of them, singing. And then you think, okay, what's going to happen now? And you know the big mistake that Van Gaal and the Dutch made is that they stopped playing. They stopped playing in extra time.
They just played for penalties.
Exactly. They retracted. They played the low block or kind of medium block, but to the halfway line, and that was it. And I think Argentina, in the other hand, got a bit of the ball, kind of found some energy again, a bit of momentum. You're right. They had chances. They hit the post.
Lautaro chances. Yeah. Enzo Fernandez hitting the post.
Exactly. And then that was the shift that really Argentina needed and that the Dutch gifted them. And after it depends. And I was always going to bank on Emi Martinez, who, remember in the Copa America, how good he was on penalties against Colombia, for example, against Noppert, who had never been in this situation, had never been in a penalty shootout.
Can I give you an Andries Noppert stat?
Go on.
Which I found on Wikipedia, so you know it's true. Andries Noppert is 28 years old. He's been a professional goalkeeper for 10 years. Do you know how many league appearances he has?
No.
45.
Yeah.
45 appearances in 10 years, and he's starting for Hope Holland as well. I'm sorry. And he's been good. And he's actually
been okay
throughout the tournament. I think what's been problematic has been Holland. This whole, like, Van Gaal, like, let's be defensive, blah, 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 let's stop playing, let's be smart. I'm sorry. I don't want to say it doesn't suit Holland, although there's a lot of Dutch purists back home who don't like it. But I don't think it suits these players.
He's got good players. I mean, this was so anti-football, Gary. It was, and they had a lot of the ball. I think in the end, they have more passes. They completed more passes than Argentina. And I thought De Jong was outstanding, both with the ball and without the ball, because he kept an eye on Messi a lot of the time. And when he was not De Jong, Frankie, that is the good one. When he was not De Jong, when he was not Frankie, one of the centre-backs, especially Ake, was clearly coming out really high. And that was clearly the game plan. And to a certain extent, it worked at time. But my word, come on, Gabco, Frankie, Depay, Van Dijk, they deserve better than that. Really deserve better than that.
A word on the referee, Mateo Lajos. A lot of people didn't like his officiating. 14 yellow cards, plus one for the legendary Walter Samuel, the wall.
Yeah, the wall. I mean, it's all about himself. And that's why it should not be like that for a referee. And I thought he lost control of that game pretty quickly. I mean, it didn't help when Paredes comes on and, like, clearly all he wants is the fighting, because I thought Paredes made that game explode in the way it did. I don't think Mateo Lajos helped either.
When Paredes goes and rifles the ball for no reason.
In the bench.
Against the Dutch bench, and they all rise up. Somebody goes and, I think, body checks Paredes to the ground.
Van Dijk, yeah.
Now, I cannot think of any reason why you don't immediately give Paredes a red card. I cannot think of any...
The tackle on Ake was bad in the first place, and then he kicks the ball into the bench.
A little bit about Argentina, though, because projecting forward a tiny bit, I mean, we've pointed out Haaland's issues. To me, they didn't look fluid, and they didn't look great against Australia. And I wondered if there was a rerun there. Because remember, Australia, they're 2-0 up, ha ha ha, it's all fine. Man, these guys aren't that good. In fact, Haaland weren't that good until that point. Mm. And then there's the fluky goal, and then there's the run, and it's nearly 2-2, right?
Yeah.
Was this a rerun of that? Are you going to blame Argentina for the fact that they let a 2-goal lead?
Yeah, I think something went wrong clearly there. I mean, maybe it's simply the fact that once you have the Bad De Jong and Weghorst, and Van Dijk was playing center forward as well.
You know what's going to happen.
Yeah, it's going to be the
big boys.
Which is not easy to defend against. And also, Croatia are not going to do that. And then whoever you play in the final, if you qualify, are not going to do that either. So maybe we can slightly give them a pass a little bit. However,
but you don't see a Petkovic, Budimir partnership.
Maybe. And Mandzukic comes back as well from his holidays. But I think they get tired. I think Messi gets tired and kind of disappears. And when Messi disappears, just when you need him to hold the ball up and let the time goes, I think if he gets tired, it's more difficult for them because they rely so much on him.
It's a great point. Look, I'm assuming Messi won the match of the Man of the Match awards because he usually does. And obviously you could say he was obviously deserved in this game with the pass and then the penalty converted. But I want to get to this issue of Messi dependency because I agree with you, in the extra time, Messi did look tired to me.
Yeah, he looked tired.
Others stepped up. Enzo Fernandez, I thought, stepped up again. Lautaro, who's been so criticized, and rightly so, because he hasn't been good, he had those chances, which you're telling he should have buried, but he brought that energy.
Yeah.
That Messi dependence thing,
maybe.
I think it kind of comes and goes.
And I like the back five, I have to say. And I wouldn't be surprised if he keeps the back five against Croatia, because I thought the team was nicely balanced against a team that didn't want to really play football. But still, they were nicely balanced. Molina scores a great goal coming from that right wing back position that suits him well. And Acuna well on the other side, who got the penalty too. So I think the back five worked better than what we've seen so far, and I wouldn't be surprised if he kept it. England take on France on Saturday, Gab, in a few hours' time. And it seems that it's all about, everybody is talking about the same thing. Kylian against Walker. Surely there's more to that in that quarterfinal.
No, it's just that, because Calvin Phillips come out and talk about how, you know, Kyle Walker is the quickest player he has ever seen. Now, Kyle Walker's very quick.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's seen players who are quicker, if only because Kyle Walker, I presume at 30, is slower than younger Kyle Walker
a couple years ago, for example.
Yeah. Kyle Walker coming off injury is probably slower than fully fit Kyle Walker.
That's very true.
What I'm interested in is, do we think Southgate might change his system and move to a back three just to deal with this?
Maybe.
You can stick a Trippier or an Alexander-Arnold to his right, turn it into a back three.
The problem is who you take off then. That midfield three has worked really well. I've brought you balance. I've brought you a mix of everything.
Well, you're Southgate. You take off a striker.
Okay, so you only play with Kane and someone next to him, who there's, apart from Callum Wilson, and I guess maybe Marcus Rashford.
This is not Saka.
So you drop Saka.
And then
you
bring Saka as a game changer off the
bench. Oh, yeah.
But you won't concede because you've got... No, I'm kidding.
I don't know if he's thinking about it.
But I do wonder... I mean, if you make it so much about Walker versus Mbappe, you know, Walker's still a fullback.
And
it does leave the rest exposed. I personally would feel better about Walker in a back three, not because Walker's bad, but because I still want to have
that
fullback
understand.
Getting forward, putting in crosses for Harry Kane or for the runners from midfield.
That would be my thing. Yeah, and the French haven't mocked Walker, but they've been saying... Listening to what the English were saying, they're saying, like, what, is this a 100-meter race now? Are we doing athletics here, or are we actually doing football? Is this just about speed, or is it just about pace, or is there something else that Kylian can do?
Okay, but you agree. If you're playing Kylian Mbappe, if you can keep up with him, that is significant.
Let me just finish on this. Kylian Mbappe has scored 5 goals in this tournament so far, yeah? None of them is through pace. Of the 5 goals that he scored, none of them had anything to do with his pace.
Okay, the one I would dispute... The one where he runs into the box and he just absolutely belts it into the corner, I think the defenders all freeze because they're worried he's going to take it further.
Yeah, but he didn't. But
it was
so
the
he didn't
threat
use his,
of pace.
Yeah, okay, but he didn't use his pace still. Right. So you can be as quick as you can against him. He can score without using his pace. So,
speaking of England, the Football Association will reportedly give Gareth Southgate a 2-year extension, regardless of how England perform in this World Cup. Does that make sense to you, Jules?
If they want to keep him, yeah, of course. I question more the fact that would he want to stay. I think he's been taking a lot of stick before this tournament so far. Remember, they came here in the back of 6 games without a win, defeated 4-0 by Hungary, and those kind of games. So I did think that maybe after this World Cup, whether they go on and win it, whether he stops in the quarterfinal, whether he stops in the semifinal, I don't know, but maybe he felt like he would have had enough. So I don't know how he would react to a 2-year extension proposal be there on the table. I don't know. I felt that his cycle was coming to an end.
Though?
I don't know. There will be club in the Premier League that.
No, I'm sure he can get a job. But the last time he was a club manager, he wasn't particularly good.
I know, that was a long time ago.
Well, that's fine. And then he was under 21 for a long time. Wasn't particularly good. Okay. And then he kind of found his.
So you think he's just made for this? He should stay.
You know what? He's such a nice guy, and he's got the nice nurturing environment. I think it's right for a national team. I don't know that at club level.
No. I hear you.
And I don't know if he wants the aggro of the week in, week out. You know, I think he's kind of settled in this. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Yeah, maybe.
Selling a little or a lot. Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit $1 million stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. What I love about Shopify is how no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Because businesses that grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/gabjules, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/gabjules now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/gabjules.
Portugal faced Morocco in the other quarterfinal, the last one, Gabby. What sort of game do you expect? And more importantly, do you expect Cristiano Ronaldo to start?
That's a great question. I genuinely don't know.
Can't drop Gonzalo Ramos after a hat trick at the World Cup.
Why not? Because you dropped Cristiano.
Because he was not being good. Ramos had been great. Why would you drop someone who's been great?
Okay. A couple of days ago, I sat here next to somebody. Oh, it was you.
It was me.
Who said that? Cristiano would have scored at least 2 of the 3 goals that Gonzalo Ramos would
True, score. But
and
he didn't.
Might have scored another one.
I know, but Gonzalo Ramos scored those goals.
Fernando Santos can do whatever Fernando Santos deems is best for Portugal.
Of course.
He said it was a matchup thing.
Yeah.
Now, it might be a matchup thing against Morocco, too. Personally, if Morocco are going to sit deeper, if I'm against, I mean, we saw both Roman Saiz and...
Gerd.
And then, yeah... Aguerd?
Yeah, Aguerd, yeah.
Both those guys coming with Knox, right?
Aguerd is out.
Aguerd definitely out. Yeah. So it's not that other dude, the penalty specialist who looked like he was terrified.
No, Yamik from Valladolid.
Okay.
I mean, not much better, to be fair, but yeah.
Maybe I like Cristiano in the box against those guys.
Yeah, no. Maybe.
I mean, I don't know that we necessarily have to be one-dimensional one way or the other about this, right? There's a lot of talent. To me, this game's going to be more decided by how Portugal defend against Morocco when they do come forward. Because I think that's a question mark. It's a question mark with the fullbacks, regardless of whether it's Guerreiro, whether you have Cancelo or not. And it's got to be an issue in the middle of, well, Pepe, at his age.
Yeah, but you know exactly what Morocco are going to do. And fitness-wise, physically, I don't know if they can. They would have to reproduce pretty much everything they did against Spain. And I just don't know if physically they have the capacity now to do that because of the injuries that pretty much every single player has, the tiredness, the heavy legs, and all of that. So, you know, I think they need something special in that game if they want to qualify.
See, Luis Enrique, he is no longer, of course, the manager of Spain in his place. It's Luis de la Fuente. formerly the Spanish under 21 coach. More of the same, Jules?
Well, and to start with,
a little less wacky.
Yeah, and Luis Enrique was certainly the big star. I think he wanted to be the leader and the big star, and he'd won everything at club level, obviously, with Barcelona. And you go from him and that kind of status and that kind of stardom, if you want to call it that way, to someone that nobody knows. Even in Spain, I think there's a lot of people who would have never heard of Luis de la Fuente. And we know because we deep into this in football, but there will be a lot of people watching our show or listening to the podcast who have no idea who he is. And yet he's had success in the youth Spanish teams, and the 17 and the 19. Great, he was with the Olympic team at the last Olympics. But this is a different world.
It is a different world, and I think what we're going to see sometimes when we have those kind of like federation lifers, there'll still be a strong identity, but we're not going to see a little bit of those kind of flights of fantasy. Oh, look, no Thiago Alcántara because he doesn't fit my scheme or whatever. I think it's going to be a little more traditional Spanish, still all about the ball and passing and movement, but a little more conventional,
which I think is a good thing. Yeah, it's a good thing. Let's give him a chance anyway. You know, that's all we can do. Gabby, remember the dispute over the sale of beer at the World Cup here in Qatar? Well, FIFA reportedly seeing some sort of legal settlement from the Supreme Committee. That makes sense, right? Well, one of their sponsors.
100%. Budweiser is one of their big sponsors. Budweiser, we're told you'll be selling lots of beer here. FIFA guaranteed it to them. Budweiser gave FIFA a lot of money to be able to do it. And then all of a sudden, look.
2 days before the start of the tournament.
Yeah, the government's trying to change your mind. But once you've signed contracts, then you're going to have to compensate Budweiser or compensate FIFA, who then compensate Budweiser. I don't think there's any two ways about that.
No,
I think
definitely.
Even they accept it. Arsene Wenger has gone off the biennial World Cup idea, Jules. But he has other plans in Africa.
Yeah, that's right. So, we can forget about the World Cup every 2 years. He said, like, well, it was an idea, but now we're not going to go there anyway. Okay, Arsene, but we did tell you before, that's for sure. However, he likes this Winter World Cup. He likes it here. And he says that, well, if we really want to make this sport global, we need to go to Africa again. And there's a lot of countries in Africa where you can't play in the summer, of course. So why not having a Winter World Cup like the one we have in currently here, but in an African country?
Okay, yeah. So what do you think, like 2034, 2038 at some point in the future? I don't think there's any question that, especially with an expanded World Cup, I think it opens the door if we're going to have more countries sharing a World Cup.
Yeah.
It does open the door. I don't think there's one African country on its own.
Definitely.
Except maybe Nigeria that would want to do it, that has a size and whatever. But even then, if you have to build all those stadiums you might not use, we don't want to see that. So I would much rather, let's share it out. Whether, we're seeing joint bids from Europe, from different parts of the world. Have it out. 3-4 countries, 2-3 stadiums each. Do it that way. That's the way forward. I think you bring the World Cup to more people if you go into it that way. You have less waste.
Yeah. A worker died in an accident at the resort which Saudi Arabia used as training camp, Gabby. And FIFA said that they were deeply saddened. But Nasser Al-Khattar, the CEO of the 2022 World Cup committee, was a bit more tone deaf.
I'm going to quote what he said, right?
I mean, tone deaf is even kind for you to have put down.
Yeah, I don't know if he was just having a bad day. But this is, to me, it's unacceptable what he said. He said, we're in the middle of a World Cup and we have a successful World Cup. And this is something you want to talk about right now. Now, I'm going to give you the benefit of the doubt that maybe you thought they were talking about the people who died before and you're tired of them bringing it up. Maybe that would still be inappropriate, but maybe.
Yeah.
But this is a new guy who died, right? The Qatari government has already said, your government has said they're going to go and do an inquiry to figure out what's happening. And you're going to say, oh, no, let's not talk about this guy who died on the job. Let's go and talk about what a great World Cup it is. There's enough people talking about what a great World Cup it is, right? You still have some sort of responsibility. You're still representing your country. Come on, man.
Yeah.
You should know better.
He said, like, oh, death is part of, okay, thank you.
Yeah, he said dying is part of life. No, actually, dying is kind of the antithesis. You're either dead or you're alive. No. Choose your words differently. Nasser Al-Khelaifi gave an interview in which he offered up some Lionel Messi news.
Yes.
Jules, what did he say?
He was quite optimistic, I thought. He was quite bullish about the fact that Messi could stay. And we know that Messi is off contract, obviously, in the summer in Paris. There's a lot of rumors and allegations that he could go to MLS, that he could go back to Barcelona. There's a few options for him, but Nasser Al-Khelaifi clearly believing quite a lot that he could, that he's happy in Paris, that he wants to stay even in Paris. He said in his interview, he also said that he's going to go after Marcus Rashford if he's a free agent in the summer, and he still has, if he hasn't extended his contract at United. So,
Marcus Rashford to replace Kylian. Perfect.
Well, to play with Kylian.
You said he wanted to leave.
Yeah, to play with Kylian.
By the way, what happened to the Inter Miami story? The Messi to Inter. I thought that was all done. Yeah.
Well, maybe, but certainly Nasser Al-Khelaifi didn't know about it.
Yeah, and maybe at Inter Miami, I think there's a lot of tension right now between the different ownership groups.
That's very true. Juventus, the Juventus story rumbles on, Gabby. There's good news and bad news. Where do we go first? The good one or the bad one?
Let's go with the bad news first, and then we cheer ourselves up. So the bad news is, and I think this is really awful. As you know, I've gone through what they're being investigated for, but one of the big things was when Giorgio Chiellini, who was the club's de facto union rep, he sends a message around to the WhatsApp group and says, hey, guys, we're going to tell everybody that we're taking we're going to basically give up 4 months' wages each. In fact, those wages will really be deferred because as long as the league starts again and whatever, we'll get them back next year and blah, blah, blah. But nobody can talk about this. Yeah, nobody tell anybody
about
this.
Don't tell anyone.
Now, obviously, the screenshots have been shared. And by the way, it's been reported that somebody shared the screenshots and that's how the investigators know. I wouldn't be surprised if the investigators actually tap the phone. It's not that difficult.
Yeah,
they do it with Rubiales in Spain every week, seemingly,
right? Yeah, exactly.
Right? But what's really shameful is one of the Juventus players has been named. I'm not going to repeat what his name is, but he's been getting so much abuse. People have got it in his head that, oh, you're the one who ratted us out. I'm like, first of all, if you're doing something illegal, you should care about your club that they're not doing something illegal that gets them in trouble, first and foremost. Secondly, not that you're being ratted out by somebody, and you don't even know if it's him.
I know.
So it's absolutely shameful, I thought.
Really unfair.
Mikel Arteta says there is still no timeline for Gabriel Jesus' return. Jules, they have to get another striker in January, right?
I think so. I don't know what they're going to do right now. I think they're not far. They're down the road here in Dubai in their training camp, in the winter training camp. I think they are deciding what to do. It's a tricky one because they're hoping that it will go back. So 3 months is really, I think, the longer it can be out. They're hoping that maybe it could come back a little bit before surgery was successful. And now he's starting his rehab. Do you go in the meantime with Nketiah? Do you move Martinelli centrally? Do you bring back Balogun from his successful loan in Reims to be on the bench, for example?
Has he been any good?
Very good at Reims. Very, very good. Yeah, he scored 8 goals in Ligue 1 already or something like that in the first half of the season, or 7 goals. So there's that. Or indeed, you go and buy someone, I don't know, like an Ivan Toney, or I know he's got this gambling investigation against him. So but you know what I mean?
Maybe he can pull a Kieran Trippier and somebody can bet on him.
No, I meant like someone who you know is going to hit the ground running because he knows the Premier League. There's no point going and get like, I don't know, Sesko, for example, at Salzburg, who is a great talent, but he might not be ready now. And what's the point if the guy is not ready? If you go and buy someone, you need someone who's ready now to be in your team and to have an impact straight away.
Yeah, I completely agree. If this were Italy, where top clubs have no issue, like kind of loaning each other players when they need them, how cool would it be? Why not Chelsea? You could give them Kai Havertz on loan.
Oh, my God, yeah. Oh, Aubameyang.
Nobody seems to like, oh, yeah, better, yeah. Yeah, I don't know about that.
Sure.
I don't know how much it would be appreciated.
The Glazers haven't taken a dividend at from Manchester United for the first time in 6 years. Gabby, I think we should celebrate that. But why suddenly being so generous?
Because I think they realize that they want what's best for Manchester United, and rather than taking profit out of the club, they're going to go and spend it to, they're going to redo Old Trafford, they're going to spend more. No, they're not.
No, unfortunately.
I think probably because the financial results weren't so good, and possibly because you want to make the books look a little bit better if you're trying to sell the club.
And they're going to cash in soon, right? They're going to make a huge profit. So
we think so. If they don't set the bar so high, then nobody buys it.
True. That's
you know,
true.
Once you say my club is worth $6 billion, there's very few people who can buy it. I'm not sure it's very much a buyer's market. You know, even though people love talking up, oh, $10 billion, $8 billion. You know, fact of the matter is, the most expensive football club ever is still Chelsea, and they were sold for 2.5. Okay, so 2.5 to 6. I know United are a bigger club, but that is
that's a
really, really big jump.
Yeah, it is a big jump.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
The inquest into German football's shortcomings at this World Cup continues, Jules. Some are blaming the training camp, saying it was too much like a holiday resort with wives and families.
So, you know, they picked a camp, like a training camp, really far away from where pretty much everybody else is. It was them and Belgium who were also far away, like literally in the desert.
Another
much.
Club who did great at this World Cup.
Another team, Belgium as well. And maybe there's something in it. It was very relaxed, that's for sure. As Didier Deschamps often says, you know, is you need the team spirit to be right because he can't win you games, but certainly he can lose you some at the World Cup. And maybe that was part of the problem. I don't know. We can always go back to the Japan game where they could have been easily 3-0 up, though, you know, before Japan scored their first goal. So I think that might be part of the problem. Like France had at the last Euros, for example, their training camp was not good enough and the players struggled with it. So maybe there's something in it.
It's funny with this wives and families thing. Like, it's kind of like, oh, when you're bad, if you run a very tight ship of a training camp, you're like, oh, look, the players can't let their hair down, blah, blah, blah. And otherwise, even wives and families, oh, no, they're too loose. I mean, Deschamps is right. You need the right
balance.
And with the Moroccans, we all praise them. Oh, part of their secret. Look, they've all got the families here, grandpa and grandma.
Yeah,
come on now.
That's true. According to reports in Japan, Kazu Miura is on his way back to club football, joining Oliveirense in the Portuguese second division. Gab, he's only 55 years old.
55 years old, but, you know, age is just a number, fit as a fiddle. Maybe he can be an inspiration for Cristiano. Maybe Cristiano wants to play till he's 50.
God, yeah. Cristiano is a baby. It could be his son, Cristiano.
I really like Kazu Miura as a player. I like the fact that there's somebody playing professional football who is substantially older than I am.
Yeah, that's true.
However, this is becoming a little bit of a freak show.
Yeah,
like this idea that you keep going out and you go and you play 15, 20 minutes and yeah, you're fit. But you know that if you're going to play 90 minutes, even Portuguese, you're just going to break. You're going to snap in two, right? So
just let go, please, Kazu.
Kazu, we remember the good times.
Exactly.
I don't need to see much more of this.
No, definitely not.
Now, last time we brought you the story of Samuel Eto'o getting into it with a YouTuber and going and kicking him and kneeing him. By the way, I don't know if there's been any charge or even much of an apology.
Yeah.
But there's a twist here because the Cameroon FA say that Eto'o is being blackmailed.
Yeah, it's a statement that was published today by the Cameroon Federation, which I invite you to go and read it in French, of course, but you can find translation.
There's one in English.
There's one in English as well? Okay, I only saw one in French.
It's called Fake Foot Officier or something. Just look it up.
Just go and see that, because they indeed accuse a journalist that we know together.
Yeah.
I don't know if we name him or not, but you can find his name easily now. Accusing him of trying to blackmail Samuel Eto'o, contacting him on WhatsApp and saying, listen, I've got a USB key with plenty of documents on it. I've got loads of things against you and against the Federation. I'm happy not to use it against €25,000, which is the amount that is given in this Cameroon FA statement. So this is not something that someone...
No.
This is the official Cameroon FA statement about this incident, this affair, that this French journalist were clearly asking for a lot of money from Samuel Eto'o to make those kind of stuff disappear.
Yeah, and the allegation being, among other things, that supposedly players were paying to be called up to the national team.
That's right.
Like, I'll just say this. I have a lot of faith in Romain Molina. His lawyers, I don't think you can... He's already instructed his lawyers to go and take action on this. This is a very, very serious accusation to make.
Yeah.
Blackmail is a crime. And, you know, Cameroon FA, I hope you know what you're doing.
I hope you
back
this up.
This is going to be pretty embarrassing if you don't.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not the first time that Romain Molina is involved in that kind of stuff. So let's see where that goes.
All right, Jules, that brings us to an end. But we got to come back on Sunday because we need to debrief that huge... massive England-France game.
I cannot wait.
Huge Portugal-Morocco game. Look forward to those massive semifinals on Tuesday and Wednesday. So we're going to be back. It's going to be 48 hours, something like that?
Less than that.
Until then, love the game, love your neighbor, love yourself.